This man changed the world.
Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar. Allahu Akbar, Khomeini Rahbar.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
شما در این قرن معجزه کردید. ملت ایران ملت معجزه آسای قرن است.
الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر. خمینی رهبر. الله اکبر.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم and welcome to the program The Man Who Changed the World. I'm Sayed Jabari, here with our guest speaker, Dr. Mehdi Torabi, an expert and Islamic researcher. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
Today we have a quote from Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, where he says, superpowers want to suppress the humanity of humans. You know, what do you make from that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is related to what we were speaking in the previous program about Imam Khomeini. We ended by saying that, you know, basically, Imam was there to build, as all Muslims are supposed to, as all the religious leaders, whether it's Masum or Qayr Masum, are there to build humans. And a real human being doesn't accept oppression, doesn't accept to be dominated, doesn't accept injustice, doesn't allow himself to be oppressed. And this is one of the things that Imam used to tell us at the beginning of the revolution and as part of the struggle for the establishment of the Islamic Republic, is that they are really, that the dominating powers, whether it's Taghut, the governments within the Muslim countries in Iran, or their supporters, they don't want people to be real human beings. They want them to be, you know, in a way, creatures that are completely at the service of their lowly desires, who will be consumers of their products, who will be, you know, willing agents and executioners of whatever it is that those taqut and those powers want them to do. That they will not be liberated humans, that they will not be educated, that they will remain ignorant. And this relates to what we were talking about before, about how this revolution and how the Islamic Republic has so fundamentally transformed the lives of so many people in Iran for the better. Mm-hmm. From going from a very feudal, illiterate society, the majority of the people, considering even that glorious history that you would have, you know, even, you know, 5% or 10% of the population living in that state that they did in at the time of, you know, the previous regime. But it wasn't just 5 or 10%. It was, you know, the vast majority. It was 70, 80% of the people who were like that. And so basically what Imam was talking about is that this America, these Western powers, don't want us to be real human beings. And this is related to what we were talking about and what's been going on in the news.
Yes.
Which is that, you know, when we're talking about having discussions with the West or with the Americans, and as the Supreme Leader has pointed out so many times, is you have to understand the nature of who you're dealing with. It's not about getting together for, you know, a few rounds of talks and that's it. You might do that on specific subjects, on very specific matters. But you cannot lose sight of the nature of who you're dealing with. And who you're dealing with, the way he says here, are powers and are people who don't want us to be real human beings. They don't want us to have knowledge.
This is why we see like Western superpowers with such an opposition to, you know, Islam and to an Islamic government and Islamic state, because, you know, Islam in reality is a religion of submission by definition, you know, but it's a religion of building humanity.
Exactly.
You know, it's submission to God, but it's a religion of building humanity. And, you know, the great alims, you know, that were during the revolution that, you know, these Western superpowers were assassinating left and right.
Exactly.
You know, were telling us this, like Ayatollah Motahari.
Exactly.
You know, the, you know, great friend and, you know, colleague, you know, and companion of, you know, Imam Khomeini.
Exactly.
You know, he was telling us, you know, there's two types of freedom. You know, the West is constantly shouting, you know, freedom, freedom, freedom. Exactly. You know, we have freedom, you don't. But, you know, they don't even know what freedom is.
Exactly.
You know, he's telling us, you know, there's spiritual freedom, you know, and there's a physical freedom. You know, man is a complex, you know, being.
Exactly.
You know, we have lust, we have desires, we have anger, we have envy, you know.
Exactly.
If a person cannot control his own spiritual freedom, how can we expect a man to, you know, respect the freedom of his neighbors?
Exactly.
Or, his, you know, his other people in the society.
Exactly. And that's exactly the point, is that, you know, when you're dealing with these people, know the real nature of what they want.
Yeah. And Islam teaches us these things, right. and this is why they oppose Islam.
You know, just think about this for a second. So, through all these difficulties and sanctions and all that, we have young scientists in this nation who are able to solve the most complicated issues relating to advanced technologies. For example, they said, you know what, we're not going to give you any more these fuel plates so that you can have the medical reactor for all the people that require nuclear medicine when it comes to cancer. So it's about 800,000 mm-hmm. people. They said, you know what, we're not going to give it to you. Very simple, very straightforward. We're not going to give it to you. We're just going to let hundreds of thousands of people die. Just to show you that we have the power and you need to submit to us. And what happened? What did the Iranians do? They built it themselves. And then what did the Americans do? And they killed the guy who did it.
Yeah.
Which was the nuclear scientist that they assassinated. Okay? So this is what we're talking about. I mean, why would you do that? Why would you do that? He's a scientist. He's helping
medicine,
hundreds
and,
of thousands know. Of people to survive. These are mothers, fathers. These are, you know, brothers, sisters, children.
Yeah,
why would you do that?
The West, you know, they're always talking about, you know, helping humanity, you know, sending relief and sending aid to these countries and those countries. But, you know, under the table, they're saying, you know, if you don't follow us, you know, we're not going to help you. You know, you guys can just
rot. We're not
going to
help you. We're going to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay.
And if you try helping yourselves, you know, we're going to...
So they're going to kill you anyways. So, you know, when we say or when Imam says this, and he said this, whatever, almost 35 years ago, he's saying things that are reality. They're the facts on the ground. They are the historical, you know, experience that we have with these people. Okay. Why shouldn't the Iranians be able to have nuclear medicine with their own power? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
Most of the other, you know, advanced countries in the world, they have it. You know, Japan has it. You know, all
what's
these other
wrong
countries.
With us having
There's nothing wrong.
The ability to produce fuel plates to power our research reactors in order to have nuclear medicine for people who have cancer? What's wrong with that?
Exactly.
Is there a problem with that? Do you have a problem with that? Obviously, you have a problem with that. So if you have a problem with that, that means you're, you know, inhumane. You're not a human being. You're an animal. You're somebody who has so much evilness inside of you that you cannot bear to see other people being happy and successful and healthy. What kind of a spiritual disease must you have to be like that? And this is the point. So, you know, we're dealing with people who have major spiritual diseases, who are dangerous people. Dangerous not in the sense that we should be scared, but these are people who, you know, whatever good there is, they will destroy it just for their own animal desires. Okay? Now, the interesting thing is in the Quran, it says that they're worse than animals. That's what the Quran says. Why? Because an animal will eat or, you know, attack another animal and eat to the amount that is required. He won't go out and, you know, gratuitously kill another six, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a pack of lions won't just
kill
go,
a whole herd of zebras for nothing.
Right, just gratuitously. You know, we're full now. Let's just prove to them that, hey, you know, we can do this. You know, right? That's not what animals do. Animals, their own nature is limited to the extent that they can do that, and they are just in their own way. But these things, they're worse than animals. They're willing to see thousands and thousands of children die. And they did it in Iraq, and they've done it in other places. So it's not like we're anything new, you know? They did it in Afghanistan. They're doing it on a daily basis in Pakistan, you know. And just, you know, Vietnam, whatever.
And the problem is, little by little, they're, you know, brainwashing the society. You know, okay. It's not just like the superpowers, the people in charge. You know, little by little, they're putting these movies. They're putting, you know, these video games.
Right.
You know, and they're brainwashing, you know, kids from a young age through these cartoons and these right. video games. You know, it's no big deal.
Exactly. You know? So you dehumanize others. And when you do that, you dehumanize yourself. And so you end up being worse than an animal, as the Quran says. So what we're dealing with, these people, in our negotiations with them, and, you know, nobody's against negotiations. But, you know, you have to know who you're dealing with. Mm. And their goal, as Imam Khomeini said so many years ago, is they want to take the humanity away. That means you become an animal, and that means you then become something that they can manipulate and kill and destroy and have complete control over as they desire, based on their interests, whether it's their material interests or whether it's status or whatever it is. So I think it's good to look back, because what Imam used to say about these things was always on target and was Quranic. I mean, you know, Imam used to, what he used to say was Quran. I mean, he used to say it in a different way, but the base of it, the substance of it, was Islam and was Quran. And one of the problems we have in the Muslim communities is that we are distant from Quran. And I'm not trying to, you know, say a cliche, oh, read your Quran or whatever. I'm not even talking about that. Because, you know, we actually do read the Quran. But we don't reflect on its wisdom. We don't reflect on what it's actually telling us. We recite it as though it's a song. We like the way it sounds, and because it's the word of God, it has some effect on us. So this is not some, I'm not against that. I'm not one of those, whatever, Puritan type. You know, read the Quran, do tajweed, do tartil. It's good. It's beautiful. But the important part is to reflect on what it says. And it's interesting. If you actually read the Quran, you will see that it is the most hardcore thing ever. It says things in a very hardcore way. It's not one of those things that really tries to, you know, hide things or
beat around the bush
or whatever. It really just says it the way it is. And I would recommend, and I begin with myself always, to spend more time reflecting on what the Quran says. Even if it's, you know, one short surah, if you spend time knowing that on a deeper level, that's better than if you read the whole Quran and not really, you know, do
understand
it in a surface way. Exactly.
Like, we have the hadith that says, you know, an hour of, you know, reflection, an hour of contemplation is worth, exactly. you know, 70, you know.
Exactly. And I think one of the best, exactly, the tafakkur. And I think one of the best examples of tafakkur is reflecting on the Quran. And it's not, you know, because unfortunately, when we speak about religion, there's so much baggage coming from Christianity and Bible and all that we sometimes misunderstand what we're saying. We're not talking about, you know, the term fundamentalist. You know where that comes from? That comes from late 19th century U.S. You know, some of the Christian groups literally
to get back to the fundamentals,
right? And the literal interpretation of the Bible. So, you know, and then suddenly they say Islamic fundamental. Well, what does that mean? First of all, the Quran is not like the Bible. It's not the same thing.
Yes.
Right? I mean, these are different things.
Anybody who has read, you know, even a small part of either one, you know, can see that.
Right. So the Quran itself is a living thing. Do you understand? It's not a book. It's called Kitab, but in Arabic, Kitab, you know, doesn't just mean book.
Yes.
Okay, so Kitab, it's a kitab, but not kitab in like other books. It's a living thing. It has its own soul. It has its own nur. You know, it's a being. It's an actual being.
Yeah, it has, you know, it is from God, but it's a creation of God. And it becomes a little bit complex, you know, topic to get into, but it will actually give witness on a day of judgment
exactly.
to
it's
us.
Exactly, it's a being. It exists. It's a being. You can't just say that beings are just humans and plants and, you know, jinn and whatever, angels. The Quran itself is a being. It has a reality of its own. You know? So when you reflect on the Quran, you're doing that which, you know, your soul was designed to do. You know, God created you. You're the soul that God, you know, he breathed into of himself. Mm-hmm. Your soul is directly from God. He breathed that soul into a body. That body will leave one day. This, you know, will become dust when you die, inshallah, when, you know, when you're very old and had a wonderful life. And, but that soul will still be there because that soul is eternal. It's with God. It comes from God. It goes to God. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do in whatever time you have and whatever opportunity and chance that you are going to get is you need to, you know, get that soul with the Quran. Okay? And when you do that, you can see the effect that it has on your soul. And you will see it exactly as you said, that, you know, in the grave. It's not even on the Day of Judgment, it's in the grave. We have many rivayat where, you know, people are going to be in the grave the night of the, when they first go into the grave, and then they'll see this wonderful creature and being coming. And they'll be like, who's this? And it was like, I'm the Quran. And, you know, you recited me and you remembered me, so I'll remember you today. Okay? So, that's the point. The point is that as a human being, and which is a soul, which is an eternal soul, you have to be connected to the Quran. And this is when somebody like Imam comes around. And this is one of the beautiful things about Imam. And Supreme Leader has talked about this as well. He did it in the recent speech again. That one of the great things about Imam is that he was very direct.
Yes.
He was very direct. Like the Quran is. You know, we have this one ayah. We've talked about this before, but it's really worth mentioning. It's, you know, who's the most beloved of Allah? It's the Prophet, peace be upon him. Who's the peak of creation? Who's, you know, the Nur that, exactly, you know, enlightens all of creation? And you know what he says to him? He says, if you don't convey the message precisely as I've given it to you, I will cut your throat. This is Allah talking to the Prophet.
Yes, and we see, you know, that, like, you know, God, he created, you know, we have the rivayat, you know, right, that God, he created the Prophet's, you know, spirit first. Right. And then he created, you know, all of existence because of that spirit, you know, exactly, for the sake of that spirit.
Exactly. So what we're talking about, the Prophet is the most beloved. Right. And so to him, he says, you know, what's important is that you convey what I tell you precisely.
Yes.
Because it's about this program called Islam. Islam's a program. It's a program for perfection.
It's a program for humanity.
It's a program for perfection, whether it's a person, whether it's a family, whether it's humanity. And we've talked about this before, but it's good to review all this stuff again, which is that, okay, so we say Allah is perfect, right? I mean, that's what makes you Allah, right? that's what distinguishes God from everything else. Right?
Exactly.
Is that he's perfect. So would something that's perfect have an imperfect way of conveying his message? Is that even conceivable?
Exactly.
It's not even conceivable. People say, no, it's conceivable. I'm saying, it's not conceivable.
See, that's a little bit of the problem with Christian doctrine. You know, they believe that the prophets were, you know,
right,
you know, able to commit sins. You know, even now we say some of the Sunnis are saying that the prophet was not infallible. You know, he could commit sins. Right. You know, is that conceivable that the prophet
is it
know,
even conceivable
could
that
make a mistake in the perfect, delivering God's
something
message?
That's perfect would have, by the very definition of perfect, it means that what he does is perfect. Otherwise, he's not perfect. If Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala did not convey his message perfectly, he wouldn't be perfect. Perfect is an all-encompassing concept.
Yes.
There's no exception to it. You can't be perfect except for, you know, on Tuesday, right? Right? You're either perfect or you're not perfect.
Yes.
Okay? This is the problem. And you know, it's hard. It takes time. It takes maybe some years to really for things to sink in. I'm not saying I'm an exception to this. But think about this. So we say Allah is perfect. So how can he not be perfect? Is there any way he can conceive any place where he's not perfect? You can't. That means his message is perfect. The messenger is perfect and the message is perfect. You can't have the perfect with the capital P, if we're going to call Allah that, the perfect, sending a perfect message with an imperfect messenger. It's impossible.
It's, you know, against logic.
It's inconceivable. It's not only illogical, correct, as you say, it's inconceivable. By the very definition of perfect, it means everything is perfect. All its parts and its, you know, consequence, everything's perfect.
Because then we'd always have to be in doubt. It's like, okay, now if the prophet is, you know, fallible, you know, okay. Exactly. Maybe he made a mistake here. Exactly. Maybe, you know, he mixed this up.
And I'll tell you something, brother. Even Shia Ahlul Bayt don't understand this properly.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Not all of them, but a lot of them. She's like, well, what happened? So what about, you know, the succession and all that? Well, please. You know? Please, you know. So it's perfect. Okay. Now, a person like Imam comes around every couple centuries and just, you know, explodes. Bro, you know, comes and says it the way it is, the way the Quran says it. And it has to do with humanity, with being a human being, that divine definition of human being. And you see all of it whenever. And it's like, you know, the reason we're saying these things is so that people, when they're confronted with new issues and with news, with something new happening, that they understand it and can put it in the right context. So just look at the way these powers and these enemies of Islam, every year they come up with new tricks and new policies and new strategies to try to weaken Islam and the Muslims and, you know, the Islamic Republic. You know, it's always about decreasing that our humanity, whether it's trying to get us towards a more kind of perverse culture where things that are related to our lowly desires are the focus.
Which you see in the Western society. Which is what the West is. What are they doing there, you know?
Right. And it's all about
promoting, you know.
It's all that, right? I mean, you know, we've lived there. We know what it is. And when you're in it, it's so prevalent that sometimes you don't even realize it. It's so part of everyday life, whether it's on the TV, whether it's, you know, on the street, whether it's, you know, in interactions.
It started off subliminal, you know, little this, little that. And now it's like, you know, right in front of our face, you know, a giant billboard, you know.
And we don't even think about
some explicit material. And we're just like,
and you know, the point of that is, and remember, people are like, oh, you guys are prudes or whatever. No, it's about why do you have to use that to sell, you know, some product? What does that have to do with that?
Exactly.
It has to do with the fact that that person who's trying to sell you that whatever, you know, worthless product that you don't really need, the way he's trying to sell that to you is to appeal to your lowest desire.
Now it like doesn't even matter what you're trying to sell. Just putting, you know, unmodestly dressed woman, you know, holding that product and there's your advertisement.
Exactly. Or the idea that, you know, make money and, you know, you can be a billionaire and you can be a millionaire and all that. And it's gotten to the point where you have these, you know, these so-called preachers talking about, you know, whatever wealth gospel and, you know, and, you know, they're talking about Jesus and they have like six private jets. Like that, do you know who Jesus is?
Yeah, do you know how he lived? Saying, you know, sell your possessions.
Do you know how he lived?
Give to the poor. You know, if you want to follow me, you know, sell your possessions. You know we have feed the hungry.
We have one of these famous sayings by Imam Ali alayhi salam. He says, you know, talking about Prophet Jesus, Isa alayhi salam, he said he used a rock as his pillow and he used the stars as his blanket. Then we have Rivayat. He's by the river. This is a Rivayat from Ahlul Bayt about Hazrat Isa. You know, he's by the river and he's combing his hair and his beard. And then a stranger comes by the river and, you know, puts his hand in the river and uses his fingers to comb his his hair and his beard, and he takes his comb. Hazrat Isa takes his comb and throws away his comb because I don't need it. Okay, so now you know, in the name of Jesus, they're driving, you know, Bentleys and
exactly
have you know, million-dollar mansions.
You know, there was this one like story my dad told me. You know, this woman, she had one child, and right. She, you know, she was, you know, a widower, and she married, you know, a new man.
Right.
And he had like 9 kids.
Right.
So what does she do? She feeds all the 9 kids first. And then tells all of them, give half of your food to this one. So now her one kid got more food than all of them.
Right.
So what do we see now in like the churches and stuff? These pastors are saying, you know, all you people, give me 10% of your, you know, incomes.
Right.
You know, you...
And it's interesting because you mentioned that because then people turn around and be like, oh, you guys, Shias have homes, right? And we're like, excuse me, have you seen how...
much the homes is?
No. Have you seen how much... Did you see how Imam Khomeini lived?
Oh, that's one thing. Yeah, that's another.
I mean, that's the whole point. In Shia Islam, you're not allowed to be a wali. One of the
Homs is, you know, the Imam's money. You know, it's going not the to personal the poor. Money. It's yeah, going
it's not,
to, you know,
right. It's not your personal
of
money.
Islam.
It's not your personal money. So if you look at the way, for example, Imam lived, who, you know, had tens of millions of dollars at his service. But how did he live? He lived in a 50-meter, you know, one-room apartment.
Yeah. He was eating, you know, food more simpler than mine and yours.
Right. And the beautiful thing about Islam is, especially the Ja'fari school, is that if you want, we've talked about this before, but it's always good to, you know, repeat some of these things, that one of the conditions for being wali, mm-hmm. whether it's wali of a nation, whether it's wali of a neighborhood, of a city.
A person in a leadership
position is you have to live like the poor.
Exactly.
A normal cleric, the rule is this. If you're a normal cleric in a community or just mm-hmm. a researcher or if you're somebody, you know, a normal cleric, if you're doing, you know, speeches, the rule is you have to live like the average person of your community. So not too rich and not too poor. Because if you're too poor, people might not accept what you have to say. Mm-hmm. They might look at that as a social issue.
And so, we see this, you know, in for different reasons too. You know, when you're living like a poor person, what do? You go yourself. You walk to buy bread. You know,
you're part of humanity.
You're part of the society. You know right. what's going on with your neighbors. You
exactly.
know what's going on.
And this is
you know,
exactly. And this is exactly why.
If you're a rich guy, you're driving in your Bentley down the street. You don't know what's going
right.
on
and
with anybody around
you. Know,
you've
got
you have a big
assistants.
Fence around your wall.
Exactly.
Yeah, you send your assistant to go pick up some bread.
You don't.
For
you don't even
whatever.
Know what the prices are. You don't even know what people are dealing with on day. You don't go to the mosque. You don't. You know what I mean? So this is also the reason why the Islamic Revolution, the that was led by the, you know, that the clergy was the one that was the group among all the different groups that was able to really connect with the people because they were part of the people.
Exactly.
You know, the Communist Workers Party wasn't part of the people. It was a group of intellectuals in universities who you know, talked about the people and the workers, but they themselves were not really the people and workers. You know, if you look at some of the liberal factions, they were all pretty wealthy people from a higher level of society. Okay, if you look at all the different groups that existed in Iran that were part, you know, of the anti-Shah movement, the one group that was actually really with the people on a daily basis and whom people trusted and whom people still trust today is the clergy because clergy live with people.
Exactly.
Okay, and unlike Catholic priests, you know, they have kids and they have wives and the kids go to school and they deal with everyday problems that everybody else deals with. Okay? So
it's just that, you know, the clergy have like the knowledge of the Ahl Bayt and how they dealt
right.
with the same problems.
So again, this goes back to some of our problems that we have in terms of using the baggage that comes with Christianity when we talk about religion. Clergy in Islam, and especially in the Ahl Bayt school, they are not like priests. Okay? They're more like, how should we say? They're like more like religious social workers. They're more like, you know, your local... whatever, you know, person who, you know, is both the spiritual but also on the daily life matters is the one that helps you and supports you. And even today I see it with, you know, obviously most of my friends are clergy that people really trust in Iran at least. They, if somebody wants to talk about personal matters, they would prefer to talk to a clergy than to even a psychologist.
Yeah.
Okay. In the end, they feel that there's that because you have to have that connection with Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala. Not every clergy has it. I'm not trying to, you know, say that in any way. And, you know, when a clergy does something bad, it's worse than a normal person doing and has more damage. So I'm not saying this in a kind of old-fashioned way. What I'm trying to say is that Imam comes along. He says, you know, you have to be a human being. He himself was the one that built himself to be a human being. Otherwise, he couldn't do what he did.
Exactly.
And what he's saying is that these great powers, they don't want you to be a human being. That's it.
It's a fine point to end our discussion on. Well, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being here with us today, Dr. Mehdi Torabi. And
my pleasure.
We hope you'll tune in next time. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد